Welcome to Juno Afternoon on Tuesday, November 18th. I'm your host, Scott Burton. Today on the show, Claire Richardson will be here to highlight End of Life Care's Advanced Planning Workshop on Thursday. We'll talk to Chris Taylor about the Canvas. Maria Loveschuk from the Glory Hole will be here to highlight holiday needs. Clara Miller will be here with details on how to submit creative works to Tidal Echoes. And Kristen Garreau will be here to talk about changes in the Montessori program, that writer's almanac, bird note music, and more here on a Juno afternoon.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. There's praise coming from some First Nations leaders in Canada for a judge's decision to let an Aboriginal girl forego chemotherapy. But as Dan Karpinchuk reports, health officials say the girl will die without that treatment.
The Ontario judge ruled that an 11-year-old Aboriginal girl with cancer has the constitutional right to be treated by traditional medicine rather than chemotherapy. The judgment is precedent-setting. It came after a children's hospital in Hamilton, Ontario, went to court to force her family to have the girl's chemotherapy resumed. The girl, who cannot be identified because of her age, had been receiving chemo for leukemia. In September, the child's mother stopped the treatment and took her to Florida for herbal treatments. But the judge ruled against the hospital, saying the family's constitutional right to choose native treatment must be upheld. Brian Laform is a chief of the Mississaugas of New Credit.
It reaffirms our right to be Indian and to practice our medicines in the traditional way.
While Aboriginal rights were at the heart of the court fight, doctors at the hospital say the girl has a 90-95% chance of survival with chemotherapy and almost surely die without it. Some see it as a landmark ruling, but at great cost. Arthur Schaefer is a professor of ethics at the University of Manitoba.
The result of this decision will mean that an 11-year-old girl whose life could almost certainly have been saved will now be sacrificed. And that's a pretty heavy price to pay.
Meanwhile, there are questions about the alternative treatment being given to the 11-year-old. At least one news agency is looking into the claims and credentials of the Florida Treatment Center. It's called the Hippocrates Health Institute, and Florida state health officials say it's a licensed massage establishment. But its director is not a licensed doctor or a naturopath. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
The lights and freezers are back on in a southwest Alaska village, but families lost hundreds of pounds of subsistence foods after a week without power. KYUK's Ben Matheson reports.
Fred Napoka met the airplane Thursday morning to pick up a new generator. As a smaller unit buzzed in the background, Napoka and a few helpers got to work setting it up.
There are 16 oil quarts.
Napoka's new 4,000-watt gas generator came at just the right time.
With this warm weather, it won't take too long to have the freezers thaw out.
It's not uncommon for people in the village more than 50 miles upriver from Bethel to have multiple freezers where they store subsistence food, making up the majority of their diet. The more than 400 residents were without power for a week. The state sent an emergency generator on a DC-6, which fired up Friday evening, but it's too late for some. Veronica Andrew lists her losses.
80 pounds of meat, 70 pounds of bird, about 100 pounds of fish.
Roy Nikolai's more than 150 pounds of moose was no good.
Have to give it to the dogs, I guess, because I can't cook it and eat.
Community members filled out surveys Thursday listing how much food was inedible. The state wants to be ready to ask food charities for help if it becomes necessary. Local store manager Andrew Alexi still had food on the shelves, but said customers were out in force.
It's a hectic week.
When asked their plans for restocking freezers after the unplanned November thaw, many hoped that state and federal managers could open up additional hunting for moose and caribou. Marie Andrew had one idea.
Go ice fishing.
In an unseasonably warm November, many residents' calendars have been tossed aside. As freezers went warm, some even moved up Thanksgiving dinner a few weeks to save the turkey from going spoiled. For National Native News, I'm Ben Matheson in Tulaksac, Alaska.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Support for Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation provided by KSHE, a direct outlet for Zuni arts and crafts, including fetishes and jewelry. KSHE, working with the Zuni people since 1981 at 227 Don Gaspar in downtown Santa Fe. The Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce's Convention and Tourism Department welcomes to Albuquerque the Striking Eagle Invitational Basketball Tournament and Educational Fair on December 31st. Information on services and the fair at ahcnm.org. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, November the 18th, 2014. It's the birthday of the man who wrote, "If you wish in this world to advance, your merits you're bound to enhance. You must stir it and stump it and blow your own trumpet, or trust me, you haven't a chance." He wrote, "Life's a pudding full of plums, care's a canker that benumbs. Wherefore waste our elocution on impossible solution? Life's a pleasant institution, let's take it as it comes." W.S. Gilbert, William Schwenk Gilbert of Gilbert and Sullivan fame, born in London, 1836. It's the birthday of Margaret Atwood, born in Ottawa, Ontario, 1939. Her father was an entomologist, and so she grew up in the backwoods of northern Quebec. No roads, no plumbing, no electricity. She taught herself to read so she could read the comics in the paper. Went to the University of Toronto, then on to Harvard, came back to Canada, became a teacher in Toronto, and tried to fit in as a writer. She said, "I would dress in black. I learned to smoke cigarettes, though they gave me headaches and made me cough. I drank absinthe." She wrote poetry and a few novels, and then at the age of 32, she published a critical study of Canadian literature called Survival, in which she said that Canadian stories are likely to be stories not of who made it, but of people who made it back from some awful experience, from the snowstorm, the sinking ship, from the north, something that killed everyone else. It made her name in Canada, and then years later she wrote a novel about a dystopian future where the birth rate is declining and women called handmaids are kept as concubines by the elite. It was written in the prose style of Puritan Massachusetts, came out in 1985, The Handmaid's Tale. It was a big bestseller. Margaret Atwood, who said, "I've never understood why people consider youth a time of freedom and joy. It's probably because they have forgotten their own." And it was on this day, 1928, that Mickey Mouse came to life in Walt Disney's cartoon Steamboat Willie. Had its premiere in New York on this day at the Colony Theater, the first sound-synchronized cartoon. Here's a poem for today by Jeffrey Harrison entitled Adirondack Moosehead. The moose that once presided over games of Monopoly and Crazy Eights that loomed above us, goofy and majestic, into whose antlers we threw paper planes, still hangs over the great stone fireplace like the figurehead of a ship. All these years he hasn't flicked an eyelash in response to anything we've done, and in that way resembles God, whom, as children, we imagined looking down but didn't know how to visualize. A moose over the altar would have been as good as anything, better than a cross, staring down on us with kind, dark eyes. That would have seemed at least to understand, his antlers like gigantic upturned hands ready to lift us off the ground or like enormous wings outspread for flight. Jeffrey Harrison's poem Adirondack Moosehead from Signs of Arrival, published by Copper Beach Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity, introducing a 10-minute fit test to challenge memory, attention, and problem-solving to calculate baseline scores. Learn more at lumosity.com. And by Arizona State University, with more than 70 campus degrees now available 100% online at online.asu.edu. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Tonight on 360 North at 8 o'clock, ANCSA at 40 recounts pipeline politics and the creation of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. Native Report is next at 8:30. At 9, We of the River chronicles the establishment of the city of Bethel. Then at 10, The Thick Dark Fog charts one man's journey of healing from the trauma of Indian boarding school. Tonight on 360 North and 360north.org. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, November 18th, 2014. Scott Burton, your host, and in the studio with me now is Mr. Chris Taylor, the artistic coordinator at the Canvas. How are you, Chris?
Good. How you doing, Scott?
Thanks for coming down. So, man, Chris just brought in a gaggle, a plethora, a bundle of art to talk about today. This is exciting stuff.
Yeah, I'm glad you like it. This is the artwork that I brought in are just kind of a combination of original artwork and merchandise that we'll be selling at Public Market coming up here at the end of November.
And so that's kind of the big thing on your radar right now, would you say, Public Market?
We have three big things in the next 2.5 weeks. Public Market, our big annual holiday show on the December 1st Friday, showcasing all of our reach artists' work that they've been working on for the last year. And then we have a big special event happening at the Jack. One of our reach artists will be doing his first out of house, not in the Canvas Gallery, but in the Jack.
Who's going to be doing
gallery.
That?
It's going to be Avery Skaggs.
All right.
We're really excited about his work. He had a solo show a few years back that was super successful, and he's been working for the last year and a half, 2 years on a new body of work that I think will be very impressive. So we're framing all of that and getting that all ready and then gearing up for Public Market.
So. Very exciting. So I hope you'll come back on the show and tell us about the December 1st Friday and the solo show. But
sure.
Mostly you want to focus on the Public Market?
Yeah.
And actually, even before we get there, Chris, will you just back up in case we have listeners who don't know what the Canvas is and what y'all do? Just give us a little synopsis.
So the Canvas is a part of Reach, and Reach provides supports and services for individuals who experience disabilities. So 24-hour care, job coaching, you name it, there's a lot of service there. And the Canvas is part of that. We're a community art center focused on arts for everybody. So we do disability programming for artists who experience disabilities during the daytime, where we bring in artists from the community to work with our reach artists to teach them their skill set and kind of help them push their work further. And then in the evenings, we open up our doors to everybody. And have evening classes ranging anywhere from ceramics to stained glass, jewelry, figure painting, figure drawing, you name it, we have it. So,
very cool situation yeah. You guys have going down there. And tell us what your role is as artistic coordinator.
I do.
I guess it speaks for itself a bit.
I'm the one that's out looking for artists, scheduling the classes, getting the word out, hanging and promoting the exhibits and the shows, and I'm kind of overseeing and helping facilitate the reach artists and their individual artistic direction and anything else that pops up that needs an extra hand.
Sounds like fun. You must enjoy it.
It's a lot of fun. It's always busy and always a pleasure being down there. So
yeah. So tell us about some of the pieces that you brought in.
Well, we're going to have a brand new calendar for 2015 mm-hmm. Promoting 12 beautiful pieces from 12 individual reach artists, which I think is fantastic. Last year's was great, and I think this one's even took it up a notch, which is awesome. We'll also be having...
This is good-looking, this calendar.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
A collagraph by Logan Trumbull, watercolors and ink by Andrea Short. Wow.
So very wide range of different varieties and different subject matters for the artwork that's displayed in that calendar, yeah.
Very cool. I want one.
Yeah.
I'll be there.
We have them.
All right, so we got calendars right here, sort of a collaboration, if you will, of artists.
Yep. And then we also have, I just brought in two of them, but we'll have a whole set of greeting cards also showcasing our Reach Artist's work. We got them printed on a nice linen, and they'll be sold in sets. But
Very nice.
A unique way of just sending a note to a family.
Oh, cool. Member. One of Andres' pieces.
Yeah.
Nice.
It's a beautiful fish.
That is.
Yeah.
Cool. These are good-looking cards. All right, so we got calendars, cards.
Yep, and we'll be also on the merchandise end, we'll be selling bowls, plates, and mugs, all thrown by our ceramic studio manager, Brandon Howard, who's fantastic, throws great ceramic ware, and they're glazed, and then we've been using a special decal technique that we'll be putting Andrea Short, one of our artists, work directly onto the mugs and bowls and trivets, and I have a whole bunch of those down there for sale as well.
Another collaboration.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yep. And then last but not least, we'll have original artwork. We have, so in our classroom over the last year, Anari Kalanen is the artist that we brought in to work with our Reach artists. And the first half of the year, they spent working on collagraph prints, which is a printmaking process that's really worked great with our artists to capture a lot of their mark-making techniques. And then we have a nice printing press down at the canvas that we made some nice original prints that we'll have over 100 of those for sale, and each one's pretty dang unique and beautiful. So,
absolutely, what a nice variety of work you'll have there at the public market.
Yeah, we're really excited about it.
And how exciting to have so many artists participating! It must be a busy, exciting place at the canvas right now.
Yeah, this time of year, the Christmas music's rocking on the radio, and we're going nonstop. And the cool part about the public market too is that we are going to have Reach artists down helping us man the booth the whole time during the course of that weekend. So it's a great chance just to come down and talk with the artists directly and learn about what inspires them and their process and just learn a little bit more about the canvas is kind of one of our main things for being down there too. So,
absolutely. What are the nuts and bolts times-wise for the public market again?
So it's the Friday, Saturday, and Sunday directly after Thanksgiving. That Friday, I believe it's open from noon to 5, and then on that Saturday and Sunday, I think it's 10 to 7.
Okay. So again, a chance to come down, meet some of the artists, buy lots of cool stuff for the holidays.
Yeah.
Beautiful art, absolutely.
And we'll be down in the main hall of Centennial Hall, kind of in the back right corner of that room, just in case you can't find us.
So last question for you, Chris. If somebody hasn't gone down to check out the canvas yet, you know, they've heard about it a lot, what would be your advice to them? What's cool about the canvas?
You know, I would come in and start with the gallery is a good spot to go and check out the work. And from there, typically, you know, we either talk to you quite a bit about the artist that's showing. So sometimes we have community artists showing, sometimes the Reach artists. So it's a great way to kind of learn about the artists here in Juneau. And if you happen to like one of the Reach artists' work, 9 times out of 10, they're in the studio working at that moment. So you can come in, check out what they're doing, and talk with them directly. So it's cool because it's got the art, it's got great visuals, and get to meet the artists and learn about arts in Juneau pretty directly.
Sounds good. Well, Chris, is there anything else we should cover?
No, I think that kind of covers it all. Thanks, Scott.
Thank you, Chris. We'll see you at the public market.
All right, sounds good.
Ready to serve Thanksgiving meals for 8 to 12 people or half orders serving 4 to 6. Ready for pickup and eat Thanksgiving Day. Silver Bow Catering accepting Thanksgiving orders at 586-4146.
And that was the Silver Bow right there. You're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, November 18th, 2014. Scott Burton, your host. And with me now is Maria Levschuk from
That's
the Glory
very close. Host.
Yeah, can you say it for me, please?
Levschuk.
All right, that. The executive director of the Glory Hole. Thanks for coming down today, Maria.
Thank you so much, Scott, for having me.
Yeah. Well, I suspect a lot of folks out there know about the Glory Hole, but in case there are folks that don't, will you tell us, give us a little summary of what the Glory Hole does?
Yeah, we are an emergency shelter, soup kitchen, and care center, and we have 40 beds, of emergency shelter, and then we serve breakfast, lunch, and dinner every day, and then we provide other services such as assistance with transportation, clothing, and referrals, and mental health counseling, and other things like that.
Yeah, and we were talking, you've been there almost 5 years now?
I think it's actually a little over five. Yeah,
wow.
I was just thinking about that.
And how did you get into this field?
I just saw the job become open, and I thought that it would be a really great job because it entails providing people with shelter and food and what seemed like a pretty important thing to do. So I applied, and I think it was a really good move.
Oh, good. It's, so you must enjoy it.
I really, really do enjoy it. There's never a dull moment, and it's also just really very fundamentally satisfying.
What would you say you all spend the most time or the most resources on down there?
Well, right now, we spend the most resources on turkeys. But usually, I think just human interactions, just staff-to-patron interactions and just kind of community interactions and just making sure that there's harmony and people's needs are met and that we can provide them with an environment, you know, that could facilitate some kind of growth or at least stability.
Sounds good. I'm thinking of walking into the actual facility, and most people walk into the dining room or community area, would you say?
Mm-hmm.
And how many folks can sit there?
I think it just depends on how many hungry folks there are. I think comfortably we can sit about 50, but we've definitely had 100 people in there at a time. And, you know, the space just kind of magically expands and people sit not necessarily on chairs around tables. But, yeah, you can fit a lot of people into the day room.
And you're on South Franklin, right, across from Marine View, give or take.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also a big kitchen down there. And then the 45 beds, you say, are upstairs, right?
The 40 beds are upstairs.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's the holidays and turkeys. I heard you mention something about turkeys.
Right. So every year the Glory Hole gives out turkeys to families who cannot afford their own Thanksgiving meals and also want to spend Thanksgiving at home with their family instead of going to the amazing, wonderful community Thanksgiving celebration that Salvation Army puts up at the hangar on the wharf on Thanksgiving Day. And so, you know, the people who come to get the turkeys are usually not our regular patrons. They are people who, you know, just basically have a house somewhere but just need help with this one holiday meal. And so we have about 175 families signed up on my list. And there's a list downstairs, so I'm hearing it's going to be more like 200. And we have about 29 turkeys. And so really need more turkeys to be hopefully delivered to us so we can distribute them on Saturday and then Monday and then Tuesday. And the Thanksgiving basket, it has turkeys, but it also has stuffing and potatoes and rolls and pies and butter and canned corn and canned beans, which is basically all the things you would put on the Thanksgiving table. And so really looking forward to getting some more of those things so we can give them out.
Absolutely. So if somebody's out shopping in the next week or so and they see any two-for-one offer, just get it, right?
Please get it, and please bring it over.
Yeah, absolutely. What else is going on at the Glory Hole right now?
So there's the turkeys, and then they're actually also having our fundraiser, where we have a partnership with Sentinel Coffee, where Sentinel Coffee has created a special Glory Hole blend of coffee, and you can... And also, Dave Thomas, the owner of Sentinel Coffee and also a really, really amazing baker. He's making holiday rum cakes made with berries and also rum. And all the details are available on our website at www.fitjuno.org. But the coffee, I've tried it, and it's really good. And the rum cakes are also very good.
So maybe you explained this and I missed it, but is it sort of an ongoing fundraiser, or do you have an actual event? How's that work?
For the rum cakes, so people order them. People place an order of okay. rum cakes, coffee, or rum cakes, and actually this Russian puffed pastry is called bilyashi. But I don't think we have any more of those left.
Mm.
And we pick it up at the Glory Hall on the 21st, or we can deliver them.
Okay.
And so the rum cakes are not available after the 21st, but the special coffee blend is available all the way through Christmas and makes a really great Christmas gift.
And all the details you say are on your website, which is what?
Which is www.feedjuno.org.
Okay. And earlier you and I were talking a little bit about the opportunity for community members to actually volunteer there physically, maybe do some cooking. Can you tell us about that?
And so the Glory Hall is really lucky because most of the – so we are open 365 days of the year, and we serve dinner on every one of those days. And right now and most of the dinners are prepared by volunteer groups. So people sign up, and they come, and they cook a meal for folks. And usually it takes about 5 to 7 people, or sometimes people bring 12 people or 13 people, which is really – like the charter school usually has lots more people than 5. But – So, yeah, people sign up, and they come, and they help cook dinner. And right now we have probably 6 open nights every month. And so if folks do want to get a group of friends together or get their church group together or get their job place together and come and cook, they could email me at info@feedjuno.org and find out more details about that.
Yeah, I've done that before. It's very fun. You have this great industrial kitchen. There's plenty of space in it. And you get all your friends together. And I know you have some resources there that folks can use, you know, if you happen to have extra food at that time. Do you want folks to bring in food with them to provide? How's that work?
I think it just depends. I think most groups do bring the food, and then we encourage people to please not bring bread or desserts because we always have lots of those that we need to use up. And so people usually do bring food, and that's a little nicer because then our patrons get something different for dinner than what they get for breakfast and lunch with our, 10 ingredients that we usually have. But if people, can't really figure out or afford to bring food, then I think it's just really nice for people to just come and cook with our 10 ingredients as well, because, I think the more the merrier and the more community comes into the Glory Hall, the better.
Something you said earlier was interesting to me about maintaining harmony or the social situation down in the community space. Tell us, what's that like? What are some highlights for you?
I actually think that, it's so interesting because the people who come to the Glory Hall are so diverse.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you really have, people who've had really, really great high-paying jobs and they're having a hard time, or we have people with, pretty severe mental illness whose realities are very interesting and very different from my reality. Culturally, it's very diverse and very interesting. And so, but I also think that, kind of the common denominator is that most people are having a hard time.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you have such a diverse group of people, under a lot of stress from life, it is sometimes kind of challenging to figure out how to create community and maintain community. But a lot of that actually comes from the people themselves. And so it's actually really just a pleasure to observe, how people take care of themselves and how people interact with one another. But then, sometimes you do kind of have to figure out how to make it a little better and a little smoother. And it's just really dynamic and really, really interesting.
It sounds like it. All right, so lots of stuff going on at the Glory Hole, but the most immediate need is for turkeys and Thanksgiving-esque food, right?
Yes, turkeys and Thanksgiving-esque, that's a really good term, food.
All right.
And Saturday is the time when we give it away, so if it could come before Saturday, it'd be just
like
so great.
5 days from, or four.
Four days from now.
Yes, and pretty soon. And I guess the best thing to do, they probably don't even need to call, right? Just bring the food physically to the back door.
Or to the front door. Or even beep really loudly and you'll run out and get it. You don't even have to get out of your car.
Drive-in food drop-off.
Yes.
Well, Maria, that's been a pleasure talking to you. Is there anything we've missed?
No, just thank you very much, Scott, for having me. And I'm really hoping that we can pull through with this turkeys.
All right. Thanks, Maria.
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services in the Jordan Creek Center. Northern Audiology offers diagnostic medical hearing expertise and digital technology hearing instruments. 789-6780.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, November 18th, 2014. Scott Burton, your host in the studio, and now with me is Clara Miller. She's the fall intern with Tidal Echoes. Welcome, Clara.
I'm glad to be here.
All right. It's good to have you. So tell us about Tidal Echoes. Give us Tidal Echoes 101, if you will.
All right. Well, I guess the first thing to know is Tidal Echoes is the regional literary and art journal here in Southeast Alaska, and all the art, poetry, and prose that's in the journal is coming from Southeast Alaskans. So it's entirely made up of work that Southeast Alaskans have created and submitted to the journal.
Which is very cool. And tell us about your position and your fellow editors and the whole situation out at UAS.
Okay, so the journal is run by students and overseen by Emily Wall. She is one of the creative writing professors at UAS. So my job as the fall intern is to get people to submit to the journal, and you all should submit if you're a creative person. And so I try to get people around Southeast Alaska to submit to the journal. And then I create the manuscript and send that off to the editors, and those are students. We have our junior and senior editor. Our senior editor this year is Rebecca Salzman, and our junior editor this year is going to be Alexa Cherry.
Now, did they start as interns as well?
No, there's three separate positions that students can do in the journal.
Okay.
So, but if one of them, if they are one of the editors, they start as the junior, and then the next year they become the senior editor after they've kind of been trained.
Cool.
What to do.
I like how students participate in this. Absolutely. So what kind of work does Tidal Echoes look for?
It can be a wide variety. If you're looking at prose, we accept essays, memoir, and fiction, and we've gotten all of those. We've actually also gotten little plays before. We had one from Heather Laverne for last year's edition. So we've gotten a variety in that. And then poetry, any kind of form, you can submit sestinas, villanelles, gazelles, freeform. And then with art, we've had a wide variety of pieces submitted. We've had beadwork, sculptures, ceramics, paintings, photography. So it's really just what is it that you're interested in creating. And
okay. And this comes out in the spring every year, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a beautiful publication. You put a lot of work into it.
We're going to have a launch date for it on April 24th down at the Eagan Lecture Hall. It'll be a Friday, 7 p.m., and we will have our guest speakers, our featured artist and writer, talking a little bit about their craft and their process.
And who are they this year?
This year we have our featured writer is Ishmael Hope.
Oh, cool.
He's an Alaska Native storyteller, and he's worked in a lot of different mediums with graphic novels, plays, poetry, so we're very excited to have him. And then we have Fumi Matsumoto. She is a artist here in town. I know she just recently had some of her work featured in the Juno Douglas City Museum
mm-hmm.
for the Empty Chair Project.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, very talented artist as
yeah.
well. And what is the deadline for submissions?
Deadline for submissions is December 1st of this year.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're interested in submitting, you can email us at titleechoes@uas.alaska.edu, and I will be the one receiving that, and I'll let you know that I have it. You can also find our website at www.uas.alaska.edu/titleechoes. And if you completely forget all of that, you can just open up a search engine, type in Tidal Echoes, and that's Tidal like a tide pool. So you'll find it. You'll find it.
Yeah, I had no problem today when I did
okay.
a Google search.
All right, that's good.
So how much do you have a lot of work in so far? Do you need something specifically this year? Do you have a theme?
We don't have any people write to a theme. We kind of just think about work because everyone here, it's like we have such a diverse community. It's really just what we have in common is Southeast Alaska. And so you're welcome to submit a wide variety of stuff. However, we do have submission guidelines for work. So only up to 15 pages of double-spaced prose, and then 5 pieces of artwork and up to 5 poems.
And I saw on your website the submission guidelines are really easy to find as well.
Yeah.
So for details there. And criteria, again, tell us about that as far as where you have to live. And then let's talk about subject matter. Does it have to be about Southeast Alaska, stuff
okay.
like that?
All right. So the only criteria to submit to the journal is you have to live in Southeast Alaska. So if you're hearing this now, you probably live in Southeast Alaska. So age is not a requirement. You don't have to be a student at UAS to submit to the journal.
Okay. So living in Southeast Alaska, don't have to be a student. Any age is fine.
If you are 5 years old and you would like to write a poem and you would like to submit it, ask your parents for help, and I'm sure they will help you.
Great. Now, what about the theme or the topic, the setting even of a piece, if you will? Does it need to be set here in Alaska?
It doesn't have to be. We've had pieces that have been set in Alaska, but you're welcome to do a lot of different types of work.
Okay.
We've had quite a variety of poetry and prose and artwork, so it doesn't have to be writing to Alaska.
All right. Clara, just for our listeners today, let's give them a hint, some tips, anything that you can tell them sort of secret, like just with these Juno afternoon listeners, what are you looking for? What do those editors want in this artwork?
Oh, I couldn't speak for them. I couldn't speak for them. But if you're looking to get some help on your work, I would suggest grabbing one of your friends, sitting them down, having them read it. And if there's any part they stumble on, if they're reading a prose piece, just have them circle it. So it's always helpful to have a second pair of eyes read your work. Or if you're feeling very awkward, you can always read your stuff out loud to yourself and just mark down places yourself. I find that works really well when I'm revising a piece.
Folks, we have an English major in the studio right now. That's for sure. Okay. Well, Clara, it's been great talking to you about Tidal Echoes. Is there anything we're missing?
You really should submit. If you have any friends you think are interested, please let them know. We'd love to hear from them.
All right. Well, thanks for your time today. And the deadline is December 1st, right?
December 1st. That is it.
Oh, I just remembered one more question.
Okay.
Sorry.
All right.
If somebody has a piece of prose that they're working on and maybe wants to know if it is a possibility, do you guys do that? Do you communicate with, do you have the resources to do that if someone sent it to you and said, hey, I'm thinking about submitting this. Does it have a chance? Should I go in a different direction with it?
I would almost just say take a chance.
Yeah.
Take a chance and just try it out. There's no harm in just trying it out.
All right. Well, thanks for your time today.
This is Bird Note. The tiny common redpoll, one of the smallest members of the finch family, weighs only as much as 4 pennies, yet it survives the cold and darkness of winter in the far north. Most birds depart in autumn to warmer climes, but redpolls feed on birch and alder seeds that are available throughout the winter, no matter how deep the snow. They do it in the cleverest of ways, through a series of precise adaptations. Redpolls are acrobats, feeding with ease on the smallest of branches, even hanging upside down to extract seeds from birch catkins. They may shake a catkin vigorously, then drop to the snow to pick up the fallen seeds in a more sheltered spot. This little bird typically eats 40% of its body weight in seeds every day to keep itself alive. The redpoll's expanded esophagus allows it to store large numbers of seeds during rapid feeding. The bird then retires to a dense conifer, and while sheltered from the freezing winds, brings up the seeds one by one, cracking their shells and swallowing the nutritious kernels. In a land of extreme winter conditions, redpolls are survivors. Get a good look at this tiny acrobat on our website, birdnote.org. I'm Mary McCann.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, November 18th, 2014. With me in the studio now is Kristen Garreau. Hi, Kristen.
Hello.
Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you.
So, Kristen, you wear a couple hats in this community these days. Tell us about it.
Well, the hat that I'm here wearing today is as the principal of Montessori Borealis.
Mm-hmm.
And we currently, Montessori Borealis is an optional program within the Juno School District. And we serve students in grades 1 through 8. And we're kind of a part of a couple of other schools. Technically, our students are part of Harborview or Zontekahini. And what we're working on is a proposal to become our own school unit. So we won't be pieced and parceled out from other places. So we're just kind of one program of our own. And to do that, we want to expand to preschool and be able to offer some preschool opportunities and really start Montessori where it was meant to be started at age 3 and to be able to go then from age 3 all the way up through 8th grade like we do now, but really to be able to work with kids starting at that younger age.
So I suspect it's kind of obvious, but what motivated these changes for all of you?
Well, this is not a sudden motivated change.
Mm-hmm.
The Montessori Borealis community has been working on this for a long time.
Okay.
And Montessori has been part of the Juno School District for 20 years. This is its 20th year in the district. And then things kind of have moved ahead in the last year. We've had conversations with the board, some work sessions, fleshing out some ideas. And then more recently, some things have helped kind of provide us an impetus for that sense of urgency. We know there are fewer childcare opportunities now, for those young families with young children. This can help with that a little bit. And so that has kind of, that's pushed us forward a little bit as well.
Okay. Would you stay in the same location?
Yes, we would stay in Marie Drake.
Okay.
There's room in Marie Drake for us to be all together in that space.
Okay. Hey, I just had a question, because you're also the principal of Ikuske,
the alternative high school,
right? So you mentioned that the Montessori goes through 8th grade. Where do you see your graduates going for high school? Do they go to yet?
That's a good question. So graduates from Montessori Borealis generally go to Thunder Mountain or to JDHS.
Okay.
Kind of their neighborhood school, high school.
Sure.
And that's usually where they go.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. So you have these changes coming up. What are some of the things the public can do to support you?
Well, I think number one is finding out as much as you can about the proposal.
Mm-hmm.
We're presenting at the school board tonight. They're reading it, or they're discussing it as an action item, just the idea of designating it as its own school. Then kind of the other details get worked out after that point.
Okay.
But I think going to the Juno School District website, junoschools.org, and checking out the information that's there.
Okay.
That will give you a little bit more detail, and you can see the proposal as well.
Okay, so go to the school board, get educated on what's going on. Anything else?
Talk to us, send us questions, come visit, talk to me. I know lots of people in this community through all the other hats that I wear. People stop me all the time to ask me about other things. Stop me and ask me about Montessori Borealis, too. So, and we're out there. So.
Well, it seems to make a lot of sense, like you said, too, with the shortage of childcare here in town.
Yep. So. Yep. We know there are people who want, we also just know there are people who want Montessori options for their kids who don't always get it. There aren't always enough spots for everyone. So this would help us offer that to more students.
And, you know, if we have a listener out there who maybe doesn't know what the Montessori style is like, could you give us a little breakdown?
Sure. So the Montessori method is based on the teachings of Maria Montessori, who was a scientist and an educator. And it's really about students experiencing things and then learning from those experiences. A lot of the work at the younger, especially preschool, is really about getting ready to write and getting ready to be a lifelong learner. And so there's a lot of physical work. We call it work. And that continues. There's a lot of manipulatives in math. You're really learning those key ideas with math manipulatives before you kind of learn the algorithm of how to do the math. You really learn the fundamentals behind it, and then you build from there. It's such an interesting way. They call it cosmic education, where things kind of all come together to educate the child about the humanities, about literature, about science, and kind of how they all work together.
Yeah, well, it sounds good. So I guess ultimately the choice will be up to the school board, right, whether
yep.
you do this or not. So
yep.
listeners, if that all sounds good to you, please lobby your friends and neighbors who are on the school board. Well, Kristen, thanks for coming in today. Are we missing anything?
I think that's it. You know, I think adding a Montessori Borealis public program to the district can be really beneficial. So we're excited about the prospect.
Yeah, sounds like a win-win. Thanks, Kristen.
Thanks.
Thanks for tuning in to Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday. Tomorrow, Wednesday, Jeff Brown will be your host. He'll talk with some of the cast and crew of Perseverance Theater's production of Chicago. We'll get an update of youth hockey activities. Annie Humphreys from Shea, Alaska will be here to highlight upcoming cooking classes. And Sean Isley will be here to talk about 25 years of Discovery Southeast, that Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more. Tomorrow at 3 here on KTOO. The weather tonight, that's calling for rain. Lows 32 to 38. Wednesday, rain in the morning, diminishing in the afternoon. Highs around 41. Thursday, mostly cloudy, chance of rain. Highs around 41, south winds to 10 miles per hour. Thank you.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We rebroadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoonah, and K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable, on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
Stay tuned for All Things Considered coming up in about 30 seconds.